This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
Why should you listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand?
We're not boring. A lot of news is boring.
And tedious.
And depressing.
And makes you angry. You don't want to live your life like that.
Hey, I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty.
We're Armstrong and Getty.
We try to bring you the truth.
And help you figure out this crazy modern world.
How about something about a comedic tone?
We have a winner.
Yes. Listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand on the iHeartRadio app,
Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. This is the Jesse Kelly Show.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show. Another hour of the Jesse Kelly Show. All kinds of stuff to dig into this hour. Trump went to Daytona 500. I'm going to talk about that. Actually, there's something about that that surprises me. I'm going to have to yell at everybody and be Daddy Jesse about dealing with animals. Doge continues to uncover all kinds of horrific things. All that and so much more coming up on the world famous Jesse Kelly Show. Before I get to any of those things, you know what time it is. It's the start of the second hour on Monday, and so we are going to honor a genuine American hero from Pawnee, Oklahoma. Do remember that you can email the show love, hate, death threats, ask Dr. Jesse questions, and if you so desire, if there's one you love, Medal of Honor citation requests. We have a bunch of them stacked up, so we might not get to yours for a while, but this one was sent some time ago, is what it said. Jesse, I love your show. I'm so appreciative of the way you honor our veterans. I'm an Army War veteran, and you are a Marine War veteran. Thank you for your continued service. I love your discussions about history. They're truly meaningful. I would like to nominate a person for Medal of Honor Monday. His name is Commander Ernest Evans. I went down with his ship in the Leyte Gulf. I think he meant he went down in the Leyte Gulf in World War II in the battle off the coast of Samar. This man had a rendezvous with destiny, and we should be proud of such men whose courage and honor set an example for us all. I hope you will decide to feature Commander Evans on a future Medal of Honor Monday. Thank you. God bless. And it would be my honor to do so. Without further ado, let's talk about Ernest Edwin Chief Evans, and I'll give you a little background around it after I get done.
Ready, aim, fire.
Honoring those who went above and beyond. It's Medal of Honor Monday.
As I said, if you're looking for more details, I'll give you a few afterwards. In fact, I'll even give you a book recommendation at the end of this one, so buckle up for that. All right. For conspicuous gallantry and intrepidity at the risk of his life above and beyond a call of duty as commanding officer of the USS Johnston in action against major units of the Japanese fleet during the battle off Samar on the 25th of October 1944. The first to lay a smokescreen and to open fire as an enemy task force, vastly superior in number, firepower, and armor, rapidly approached. Commander Evans gallantly diverted the powerful blasts of hostile guns from the lightly armed and armored carriers under his protection, launching the first torpedo attack when the Johnston came under straddling Japanese shell fire. Undaunted by damage sustained during the terrific volume of fire, he unhesitatingly joined others of his group to provide fire support during subsequent torpedo attacks against the Japanese and outshooting and outmaneuvering the enemy as he consistently interposed his vessel between the hostile fleet units and our carriers, despite the crippling loss of engine power and communications with steering aft, shifted command to the fantail, shouted steered orders through an open hatch to men turning the rudder by hand, and battled furiously until the Johnston, burned and shuddering from a mortal blow, lay dead in the water after 3 hours of fierce combat. Seriously wounded in the early engagement, Commander Evans, by his indomitable courage and brilliant professional skill, aided materially in turning back the enemy during a critical phase of the action. His valiant spirit throughout the historic battle will venture as an inspiration to all who served him. And as I said, I'm about to give you a bit of background on that. I don't know how long I'll take. Might be 2 minutes, it might be 10 minutes, but I feel like everyone deserves a little background on that. But this man went down to the deep. They did not actually even lay eyes on the USS Johnston until recently. I think it was 2021. It was really, really, really recently. It went down, if memory serves me, in like 15, 20,000 foot depths. But Commander Evans went down with it and gave his life valiantly for this country, and he has more than earned taps. Rest in peace, brother. Jewish producer Chris just let me know it was actually October of 2019. I knew it was recent, and it was 21,000 feet deep. Just recently discovered. Okay, so this is an incredible act, and it's an incredible battle. And before I go into just a little bit of the background of it, I wanted to let you know one of the great, great World War II books I have ever read in my life will give you tons of detail around this battle that I'm not going to take the time to do now. There's a bunch of stories going on in the globe. I'll take a little, but Last Stand of the Tin Can Sailors. I'll give it to you two more times so I don't get an email asking me the name of the book. The book is The Last Stand of the Tin Can Sailors. One more time for the cheap seats. Last Stand of the Tin Can Sailors is the name of the book. All right, so here's a bit of background on, first of all, let's discuss what kind of ship this was, because this is going to matter, and it makes what Evans did and all the crew members of the U.S. Johnston, it makes what they did so incredibly cool. And the ending of this story is awesome to me. I've always, when I first read it, I almost got choked up is how much I loved it. So first, understand this was a destroyer. Now, I don't expect you to be any kind of an expert on naval vessels. So just stay with me on this. I'll give you some basics. And I'm not claiming to be an expert. I'm not some career Navy man or something like that. It's still the basics and things like that. What is, at least during World War II, what were the purpose of destroyers? Because there are carriers. You know what an aircraft carrier is. You know what a battleship is. But, okay, let's just discuss that. Battleship versus destroyer. Why the two different ships? Well, two different roles, and there's something I want you to understand. Physics. I'm not a physics expert. There's a give and take for everything. A lot of these ships, what we're dealing with is not only armor size, gun size. And the more armor your ship has, yes, that sounds lovely, but why not just put, 20 feet thick armor on all of them? Because armor weighs you down. They have not changed the laws of physics. You can have heavy armor and withstand blows and be slow. You can have lighter armor and move more quickly, but you won't be able to take near as much punishment. If you look at a battleship versus a destroyer, it's not just that the battleship is bigger. The battleship is made to take more of a punch because it has a different role, which brings us to the role, the World War II role of the destroyer. What were the destroyers doing? Like, what was the USS Johnston? What was its job? What was its role? Well, they did different things, so I don't want to act like it was one thing, but one of the main things, in fact, what it was doing at the start of this battle was, it was a bodyguard. I'll put it to you that way. It was considered a bodyguard for what? for the huge aircraft carriers. Remember, the aircraft carriers of World War II, at least as it goes to the Pacific, they didn't really play a role in the Atlantic, but in the Pacific, they were everything. World War II was fought on the Big Blue in the Pacific. It was fought in the water. An aircraft carrier is a mobile army. For obvious reasons, it's where all your planes are. You want to bomb, strafe, whatever. Your carriers are your everything. They're big. They takes a long time to build them. They're expensive to build. They don't grow on trees. And so when you get one, that is your military for the World War II, for as far as World War II goes. Now, here's the problem. The enemy knows that too. Both sides knew that. Whenever we were, what were our planes doing during World War II? Our naval aircraft, what were they doing? Always hunting for carriers. They called them flat tops for obvious reasons, but they were out hunting for carriers. Don't get me wrong. They would sink any Japanese ship they found, but the jewel was the carrier because you knew that presented the biggest threat to you. Well, the Japanese were and are very capable and very smart, too. They understood an American aircraft carrier is what you must sink. That's where all that air power is coming from. Get the carrier. Get the carrier. So you need something like a destroyer. And I'll talk a little bit more about this. Then we'll get back to politics. I don't care. I feel like doing some history. Before we do that, World War II talk gets my testosterone flowing even more. It just does. It's like any other man. When I talk World War II, my T levels go through the roof. But if we're being honest, I have a little bit of a leg up in that I take a male vitality stack from Chalk every single day. I take natural herbal supplements to ensure that I'm never going to be low energy, never going to be depressed all the time, never going to get boobs. I want to maintain my testosterone levels because of how it makes me feel. Chalk makes me feel good. When's the last time you felt great physically? Maybe it's time to give Chalk a shot. Look, it's not a lifetime commitment. Go get a subscription. If it works for you, give it 90 days. If it works, keep going. If it doesn't, cancel it. They don't give you a hard time. Try it. You might have a brand new life waiting for you. Try it. CHOQ.com, promo code Jesse. We'll be back with a little history. What, Chris? We can make jokes. It's fine.
You got that right. The Jesse Kelly Show.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show on a Monday, hopefully about to wrap up a little brief little history segment I'm doing around our Medal of Honor Monday. Yes, I will wrap it up, Chris, very soon. As soon as I get done with that, we'll get back to these Doge cuts, all the fraud they're finding, the sad story of the government employees getting fired, and so much more coming up on the world-famous Jesse Kelly Show tonight. Back to our Medal of Honor citation, in case you're just now joining us, we honored Mr. Ernest Edwin Evans, Commander Evans, commander of the USS Johnston. And I was talking about the lead up to the battle. I was discussing the role of a destroyer in World War II. In general, destroyers were fairly lightly armored. They were made to be fast. They were made to take out submarines. And especially a little later on towards the war, they were made to take out airplanes. As the kamikaze problem from the Japanese got worse and worse and worse, the destroyers were fitted to take out subs and take out planes. Again, back to what I was discussing, they're bodyguards. Bodyguards for the flat tops. Bodyguards for the aircraft carriers. Now, remember, fast. They're fast, but lightly armored. That's, look, when you want to take out a submarine, we've talked about it before. If you, to the untrained mind, if you just don't know anything about it, you would think a submarine would have an advantage over virtually anybody. No. In World War II, if they were on the surface, they had no armor. You could penetrate the side easily. Then they can't dive. If they're under the water, they have to switch to electric power, and they practically can't move. This destroyer, for instance, the USS Johnston, this kind of destroyer, roughly three times as fast as a submerged submarine. Meaning if they see you, they will hunt you down and they will kill you and you can't do anything about it. That's the job of a destroyer, the bodyguard for the aircraft carriers. brings us to 1944 when this took place. The battle off Samar. What are we doing here? What is all this stuff? We are getting ready as a country to retake the Philippines. We are getting ready to invade and retake the Philippines. Now, this is 1944. Anyone who's listening, anyone who pays attention to World War II history understands the timeline. 1941 was a bad year across the board. 1942, even after we got into the war, wasn't that much better for most of the parties involved, most of the good guys. But about towards the end of 1942, things started to turn. 43 was disastrous for the Axis. 44 was apocalyptic. So as we get ready to retake the Philippines, the Japanese Navy is in shambles. But they understand if they lose the Philippines, they've essentially lost everything they gained to start the war, and now they're just counting time until we invade the home islands. They take pretty much everything they have left at their disposal in their fleet, and they send a Japanese fleet down to the Philippines to stop us. They have their super huge battleship. They send it all down to stop us, stop America at any cost. America, look, I'm not going to go into the strategic decision-making about this. You can read the book. You can read up on it. America kind of splits its forces up a bit, and we find ourselves in a situation where this massive, powerful Japanese fleet is bearing down on those escort carriers that are so important to us. Remember, the carriers are everything. That brings us to the USS Johnston. I already explained, it's very fast, but this is a destroyer, very lightly armored. The Johnston, along with some other ships, they understand that they have to take some bold action, or this Japanese fleet that surprised us is going to take out some of our really, really important ships. And so the people on the USS Johnston, instead of running away, chose to put up smoke screens, as you heard here, and they chose to charge. They looked at this gigantic Japanese fleet, all these huge guns, and they essentially charged into certain death. At one point in time, Commander Evans, you know how it said he had already been brutally wounded? Yeah, they practically blew his hand off. It had been hit with so much stuff. The ship was crippled. They blew off multiple fingers. He had to relocate the command post. He's still commanding the ship without fingers, without maybe even a hand, commanding a ship. And what's he doing? He's not just limping along. They are firing more guns, everything they have, as they are limping and vulnerable. Remember, they don't even have armor. At one point in time, they get hit by a round from the big Japanese battleship. The battleship doesn't realize how lightly armored the destroyer is. They fire such a heavy armor-piercing round at the destroyer that it doesn't hardly do any damage because the whole round just goes through the ship like a blowtorch through butter. That's how lightly armored this destroyer is. And yet, they did not turn and run. They didn't do what any sensible person would do, because they knew they had a role to play. They knew they had to be the bodyguard at any cost. The escort carriers had to live, so they just kept fighting and shooting and fighting and shooting, and they're limping along. And remember, this is a ship built for speed. It has no armor. If the speed goes away, you're nothing. You're paper mache out there on the water. And the Japanese just started pounding this ship to dust. And they're giving it back as good as they can get it, but then the ship sinks. Commander Evans dies at some point in time after he ordered abandon ship as the ship was going into the water. And what happened next is one of the coolest World War II stories you've probably never heard about. I'll tell you that. It'll take me 5 seconds, then we'll get back to politics, okay? Before we get to that last little story, let me tell you about Pure Talk. As long as we're talking about service, the inspiration we get from people who fight, it blesses me when veterans come back and continue to serve their country in different ways. The CEO of Pure Talk did 2 tours in Vietnam with Mac V. Sog. You know what Mac V. Sog was all about. He wasn't stapling papers for 2 tours in Vietnam. He was behind enemy lines. But he didn't come back and just call it quits. He's now the CEO of this wonderful patriotic company. They hire Americans, and you know that? Long before Trump made it cool again, Pure Talk was hiring Americans. You want to save money on your cell phone service? Support a company that shares your values? Patriots, veterans? Dial #250 and say Jesse Kelly. #250, say Jesse Kelly. We'll be back.
Jesse Kelly.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show on a Monday, wrapping up what actually turned out to be a two-segment Medal of Honor Monday here. Wrapping this up, and we'll get back to some of this government corruption. I'm going to have to be Daddy Jesse with everybody. We'll get to some emails and other things. But one final note on the USS Johnston, the destroyer that charged a Japanese fleet, firing everything it could and kept firing until it took so much punishment it sunk beneath the waves. Commander Evans killed, and 186 of its crew and officers, men and officers, died. 327 men on the ship, 186 died during this whole nasty, horrible affair. Now, that brings me to a cool story I've always loved. It gives me goosebumps. You understand how the Japanese treated Allied prisoners of war in World War II. It was awful. Roughly 25% of Allied prisoners died in Japanese captivity. They died in Japanese captivity because the Japanese had no respect whatsoever for anybody who surrendered at any point. You were supposed to die for your country. That you were taken prisoner meant you were less than human. They showed you no respect. They starved you. They beat you to death. They tortured you. It was awful. Everyone knows this. Okay, you got all that. We understand how the Japanese during World War II treated the defeated. You know what they did as they cruised past the crew of the USS Johnston? Remember, there are multiple stories in World War II of the Japanese machine gunning sailors in the water. They just run over them with the boats. You know what they did? The USS Johnston, its crew, Commander Evans and his crew, they fought like such lions to the bitter end with no hope for survival. The Japanese crew of the naval vessel that sailed past them didn't machine gun them. The sailors lined up on the side of the ship and saluted the Americans in the water. Amazing, right? Friggin' amazing. That is the story of the USS Johnston and the warriors in the United States Navy who gave their life for this country in World War II. Pretty cool story. All right. Let's get back to some politics, because people can't stop talking about this. This was Stephen Miller.
Foreign fraud rings. These are foreign nationals who come into the United States. They use fake Social Security numbers. They use fake identities to steal billions in taxpayer benefits. There's no way to know until DOGE gains full access exactly how much money we're talking about. But over a 10-year normal budget window, you could be talking about saving over $1 trillion by clamping down on massive fraud in our tax and entitlement systems, including, again, those carried out by organized fraud and theft rings.
The lack of control and accountability we are discovering inside the federal government is shocking, even for those of us who already knew the government was stupid and inefficient. And we are finding out, unsurprisingly, that criminal entities, both foreign and domestic, have been exploiting that lack of efficiency for a very, very, very long time. That the people inside of our government have been pillaging this country is hard to accept. That the people inside of this government have allowed foreigners to pillage this country is somehow even harder to accept. We have guys like Representative Burchett saying things like this.
Yeah. I think you're going to see a paper trail come back to Washington, D.C. And that's why I think a lot of people are nervous, and you'll see a lot of retirements, because they are stealing from the American taxpayer, and now they've got their hand caught in the cookie jar, and all they can do is attack Elon Musk.
which brings us to this little sob story. 60 Minutes, as soon as they were done giving cover to the communists in Germany for arresting people for social media posts, they decided they had to quickly switch gears and protect the other foundation of communism worldwide, and that foundation is the American taxpayer paying for his own destruction. And of course, they brought in some government employees that all of a sudden didn't know where their next check was coming
from. People are really scared. You know, 12 days ago, people knew where their next paycheck was coming from. They knew how they were going to pay for their kids' daycare, their medical bills, and then all gone.
What do you think that lady was saying during COVID about you and your job? Just a question. I'm not trying to lower myself to her level. I'm just curious. Your job, your paycheck, when the United States of America got a bad chest cold, what do you think she was saying? You know, we lost a third of the small businesses in this country because of a chest cold from China. Let me ask you, honest question. Chris, Corey, this is a genuine question. How many segments on 60 Minutes did you see a small business owner who lost it all get interviewed? None? Corey, do you remember any? It's weird. I don't remember any, but why are we then? I guess I don't understand why we're now getting this.
Doge arrived at USAID January 27th, and that same day, USAID's top 58 managers were given 45 minutes to get out.
Oh, no. Someone lost their job? Wow, that's almost like how all of us live forever. And of course, they couldn't help themselves. At some point in time during all this, they gave the game away. Why didn't you care about those small businesses, but you do care about Susie Lesbian, who just got let off from USAID?
I think what we're really seeing is a consolidation of power. And so fraud provides a plausible sounding reason for running over what had been historical constraints, whether they were statutes or norms, limiting the president's ability to centralize power. The end game here seems to be controlling every single apparatus of the federal government directly out of the White House. And that's just never been how we've understood executive power.
Here's how he understands power. They have consolidated power and had consolidated power for the longest time. They controlled every single branch. Almost every single federal employee votes Democrat. And no matter who gets elected, they continue to push communism, foreign and domestic communism, at all times. And that's the system of government he wanted to be put into place at all times. For the first time in my 43 years, we have somebody who's actually breaking up that system of power, and the American communist is mortified. And they're, of course, trying to slow roll it, if you will, fade the heat, as the kids say. They're trying to fade the heat. I tell you, look, it's just $38 billion. I mean, what's the big deal?
USAID spending in 2023 was $38 billion. That's less than 1% of the federal budget. Natsios told us there is waste and occasional fraud like any big agency. Think of the Pentagon. But the money, he says, is watched by officials, including those in the OMB, the Office of Management and Budget.
The question is, why did the Congress approve all these contracts and grants and programs all these years? Why did OMB approve them? Why did the State Department, the F Office controls all foreign aid spending. Every line item in the USAID budget is approved by three different bodies, the F Office, OMB, and the Congressional Oversight Committees, of which there are four. No one caught all these horrible abuses.
You shouldn't even care about the waste at USAID because other people miss the waste at USAID. Plus, it's only $38 billion of your money. You have plenty of money, don't you? Don't you have unlimited money? Especially recently, in recent years. Don't you have all the money you want to do whatever you want to do? You've taken every vacation you've wanted to, right? Every time you saw a new purse, new truck, new gun, you bought it, right? Everything shiny and new around your house? How are your vehicles? All on the up and up? It's only $38 billion. Quit being selfish, you see. This is how these people think. They seized all of our institutions, used them to destroy us, and they've simply gotten used to that being the way things have always been. And now times are a-changing rapidly. I'll play you one more cut on that, and then we'll do some emails, and Daddy Jesse's going to have to step in on a couple other things before we do that. You know, you already know that I can't cook. Everyone knows that. And yet, I make an amazing brisket. I make an amazing steak. I make an amazing chicken. How do I do that when I can't cook? Well, I'll tell you something a friend told me, one of these pit master types, used to sell RVs with him. And he said, if you're looking, you're not cooking. That's what he always told me. And he said, just cook to temp. Cook to temperature. But how in the world do you do that? With IQ Sense, this little thermometer from Chefman, you jam it into your meat, you leave it in there. You don't check it every now and then. Put it in there, put it in the oven, put it in the smoker, put it on the grill, put the thermometer in there. The app on your phone will let you know when it's done. You close it, you don't look, you let it cook, and IQ Sense will make sure you have it perfected every time. If you're looking, you're not cooking, cook to temperature and save 15% on IQ Sense at chefiq.com. That'll save you 15% if you use the code Jesse. Chefiq.com, code Jesse. Enjoy being a pit master like me. We'll be back.
Feeling a little stocky? Follow, like, and subscribe on social at Jesse Kelly DC.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show on a Monday. What has been an amazing Monday. Remember, you can email the show, jesse@jessekellyshow.com. If you miss any part of it, download the whole thing on iHeart, Spotify, iTunes. One more word on those institutions. They've gotten used to institutional control. They've had it for so long, they've gotten used to it. I saw Caitlin Collins with CNN put this little video up because Trump, in one of the cooler moves I've ever seen, remember that mugshot? They dragged him into that jail in Fulton County, Georgia, and they put his mugshot up, then they put it online right away to dunk on him. Hey, look, we got him. Ha, ha, ha. We're savages. Ha, ha, ha. Well, Trump had it framed, and it's posted outside of the Oval Office, his mugshot. Caitlin Collins, member of the system, doesn't understand why.
Not only have we never had a U.S. president with a mugshot, I'm not sure we've ever had a mugshot hanging outside of the Oval Office before. But that is where President Trump has placed his, from when he was indicted in Fulton County, Georgia, for his efforts to overturn the election. We learned a few days ago he has a framed cover of the New York Post with his mugshot just outside the Oval Office in what is known as the Outer Oval. His aide and person who is his social media guru, really, Dan Scavino, posted a video of it saying, Happy Valentine's Day from the beautiful Oval Office. This has really become a rallying cry that Trump has used on the campaign trail. They've even put it on merch and sold it featuring his mugshot. And now it has a home outside the Oval Office as well.
I know self-awareness is not the communist strong point. I realize that. But it really is wild to listen to how lost these people are at what happened. They don't understand it. They really thought that once they conquered the institutions, that they could just do whatever they wanted with the institutions, and the institutional trust the American people had for those institutions would just stay forever. That it was somehow etched in stone. And they, because they couldn't control themselves, they took all these DAs, all these AGs, and decided to flex their communist muscle and just tried to arrest the Republican nominee. You communists, every one of you communists who hate listens to the show, you understand, please understand this, and you can go look at the poll numbers to back me up on this. You understand that it wasn't just me and right-wingers who looked at the lawfare against Trump and thought, that's horrific and too far. You understand that even turned off Norm and Norma, right? If you look at the poll numbers, Norm and Norma looked at all these arrests, all these ridiculous felonies, and you keep trying to defend them to this day. No one can even explain. I've yet to talk to a single lib in a social setting who can explain to me what the New York charges were. None of them even know. They're convicted of 37 felonies. Oh, really? Wow, that sounds bad. Which ones? What felonies? What did he do? You want to have a great time? Ask your liberal Aunt Peggy that. They don't. You dirty communists don't understand that the whole world, it wasn't just Americans, the whole world watched what you did and went, ew, that's kind of gross. That's kind of gross. All right. Pause on that for a moment. I need to do two things. First, I need to make sure that you have purchased some gold for your retirement. I should say woven some gold or silver into your retirement, because that's really what you're doing. Gold Co. does it for you. So don't, I don't know how to do it. You don't have to know how to do anything. That's what Gold Co. does. They have won awards in the last 10 years for a reason. The most reputable company I could find, Gold Co. They will give you a free 2025 gold and silver kit. You might qualify for up to $15,000 in bonus silver, I might point out. But get it into your retirement. You heard Trump's announcement today about the tariffs and the VAT tax. I don't know what is coming economically, not just for America, for the globe. So just take some steps to protect yourself at jessielikesgold.com or call them 855-817-GOLD. Now, the other thing I need to do is read this email. Dear two-time congressional primary winner, did Rush Limbaugh have influence over politicians? The other day you were wondering if J.D. Vance listens to your show because he said something that mirrored something you had said. So if politicians ever made decisions based on things Rush said on the radio, then I know you can influence politicians because you're every bit as good as Rush. Oh, no, I'm not. Also, you can stop worrying about tiny hands. Everyone knows it's the size of a man's feet that matter, and I'm sure yours are huge because Ob is still with you. I don't understand what you're saying there, but okay, I'll set that aside. Jesse, actually, this one says, Dear Menu Whisperer, I took my dime out to Benihana for Valentine's dinner. When the check came, it was quite a bit more than I expected, but then I noticed a 20% service fee. Most restaurants I go to, like Arby's or Jimmy John's, don't charge a service fee. I thought this was a mandatory tip, so I rounded it up a couple bucks and left the cash and hit the road. On the way home, I started to wonder who that 20% went to. Does it go to the servers? Yes, listen, I'm not going to tell you one way or the other whether I support this. I mean, I guess I can explain it to you, but service fee is mandatory tip. This is something waiters and waitresses love. They prefer mandatory tipping. Now, maybe you are a good tipper, and so you're sitting there saying, well, screw that. If I get forced to pay that, I'm not paying a dime more. And I'll tell you, that's exactly what I am. I am a good tipper. I always have been. Even when I didn't have a dime, I tip well. You force me to tip, that's the max tip you're getting. I won't add 50 cents to it. You shorted yourself with me. No question about it. However, waiters and waitresses love it, because there are tons of people out there who simply do not tip. They don't. And in the end, the waiter slash waitress brings home more money with a mandatory tip. I have a ton of friends in the restaurant industry, and every single one of them, to a man, has told me that his servers either A, loved the forced tipping, or B, if they don't do it, have practically begged him to incorporate forced tipping. You conduct yourself however you want to conduct yourself with the forced tipping. I'm just telling you, that's my policy. I get it. I get it enough that I'll still go to a restaurant that does it. But as I said, out of principle, you force it on me, you won't get 10 extra cents beyond that force on me. Now, if you don't force it on me, 20%, 20% means you screwed something up. I try to give 25, 30% if I can, especially you're putting in work. Servers, they bust their butts. They work really hard. You're putting in work, you got 25, 30% coming your way. If you got 20 from me, you sucked a little bit. You really did. But you forced 20 on me, that's the only 20 you're ever going to get. Period. End of story. Now, before we get to Trump attending NASCAR, Doge uncovering a program that told newborns they were racist. Daddy Jesse has to step in and have a talk with America. Next.
Why should you listen to Armstrong and Getty on Demand?
We're not boring. A lot of news is boring.
And tedious.
And depressing.
And makes you angry. You don't want to live your life like that.
Hey, I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty.
We're Armstrong and Getty.
We try to bring you the truth.
And help you figure out this crazy modern world.
How about something about a comedic tone?
We have a winner.
Yes. Listen to Armstrong and Getty on demand on the iHeartRadio app,
Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.